This is a program of the National Parkinson Foundation, actually. I am the Director of Field Services there. And we, as a national organization, are related to centers, Parkinson centers, throughout the world. And there are 47 centers in the U.S. And Parkinson disease, although I can't go into any detail about it, I can say that it's a very complex chronic illness. And so we have been very concerned, as we work with people throughout the country and centers as well, that our health system, as you all know, is just does not serve people with chronic illness well. And the complex chronic illness that is experienced in Parkinson's disease is particularly problematic. So from people with Parkinson's, of course, we've heard over the years of the frustration with the fragmentation in care, the fact that most care providers don't understand Parkinson's disease and they're not connected with each other, so they're receiving uninformed care. We don't even have enough funding for clinical research to identify evidence-based best practices. And then there are the healthcare disparities. And, of course, one of the main problems is that our system is oriented to delivering acute care rather than chronic care. So the care that's provided is a response to problems that occur rather than helping people live healthy lives in the context of the whole community rather than it's a reactive process rather than proactive. So as we looked at this, beginning in the year 2000, really, we started looking at this. I was brought on board with the national organization, and we were looking at these problems, and then at the same time, we started seeing the publications that were coming out that really undergirded, I think, our concerns. The IOM publications and unequal treatment came out, which you all probably know, that said that racial and ethnic minorities tend to receive a lower quality of health care than non-minorities, even when access-related factors are involved. And so I guess what I really should say in the context of that is that the professionals that were in the centers serving people with Parkinson's were saying to us, we really are not even seeing the people with Parkinson's and their families that live in our communities that are our neighbors. They were seeing more sort of the white middle class community. And so that created even a greater concern for us. And so we looked at these materials and said, what can we do? And that's when Gladys and Elaine both became involved, and we developed two national model programs that have been strategic initiatives now for the National Parkinson Foundation. One is called Allied Team Training for Parkinson. It was originally a federal grant through HRSA for training teams to work with people with Parkinson's, and then learning to work together as interdisciplinary teams. The second one is the Community Partners for Parkinson Care. That we call that CPP, and we'll refer to that. This is a program that's designed to inform whole communities about Parkinson disease, to provide resources and support to improve access to care for every person with Parkinson's. And so we wanted to address healthcare disparities, fragmentation in care, lack of culturally competent care. We wanted to reach whole communities and build sustainable partnerships. So we wanted to move from, we really were trying to work with both communities and the centers that we related to out of sort of a silo and separate relationship to build partnerships in the community with the centers and the diverse community in which they're located. So we've gone through a process for these years where we have done some learning, which Gladys will talk more about, but there are some core concepts which really are the best practices, we think, in outreach. And they are listed here. So outreach involves an intentional process of building relationships. Really, relationships are at the core of outreach. And we had required, actually, at our centers, anyone who's designated by the National Parkinson Foundation to be a center of excellence needed to do outreach, but their idea of outreach, I think, before, and traditionally professionals have been educated to think of outreach as something you do to a community. And so we're, you know, part of it is it's a relationship process that can begin small, and where you really our co-learners, it's bi-directional. So we reframed it and worked with people in the centers to say, we bring an expertise about Parkinson's disease, the best that is known, but you bring the expertise about your community. And we really worked to connect with people in the communities and to be co-learners in the process. And it's a developmental process that can begin slow. But if you engage with people and learn throughout the process, through really reflecting on what's happening, that can build and become very sustainable. And we were working in the process also of developing culturally competent practice within the organizations. This has really, really impacted our organization. Every center now, in order to be named as the Center of Excellence of the National Parkinson Foundation, is required to do this kind of outreach. And they apply every year for designation around other issues as well, but they must include this kind of outreach. So just briefly, I'll cover how this evolved. We started in 2002 with a multidisciplinary national task force of people that had done some work with outreach. We reviewed the literature of what other organizations were doing. And then I think significant to this is the fact that we did some focus groups in the community. We started, our theme was kind of listening to the voices of diverse communities. So in some of the communities, we chose 3 rural and 3 urban communities that we started in. Those were our 6 regions that we had pilot studies in. And we have felt, actually, from the beginning and preserved throughout, the need to keep members of the community that we want to partner with at the core, so that listening to the diverse communities was the beginning, but we've tried to preserve that throughout. So we got another grant to do what we call CPP1 Community Partners 1, where in these limited communities, we connected with people that we called community liaison. They were hired for only six hours a week, and then they connected us with other people that were called natural helpers, leaders within the community. And so that's how we began our co-learning. In that process, we of course figured out that we needed to be connecting with agencies that had an infrastructure of outreach to expand that process. So we started expanding, and we had some important relationships there. From 2005 to 2007, we were able to get another grant and then expanded. We wanted to expand the process, and we tried to form coalitions within these communities where we really brought people together and brought more agencies that had the infrastructure. But throughout that, we did keep the people from the diverse communities involved in the process. We are now in another phase of this, with another grant, but we are looking on a national level at working with national organizations that have an infrastructure of outreach, but keeping these principles at the core. So I'll turn this over to Gladys.
So as Ruth said, where we are right now is that we are really partnering much more with national organizations. And part of this is because we realize that there are wonderful organizations out there that have their own infrastructure at a national and more even local basis, where they really are able to tap into these communities and again continue to teach us about the best way to get to those communities. We're trying at this point to actually put a lot of emphasis on training people who are in the front lines of delivering health care, because we have learned that most people with Parkinson's disease do not actually get health care or their care for Parkinson's disease from specialists. So we're trying to go out to the clinics, going out to different places. And the first two partners that we have been working with is the National Area Health Education Center Organization. Many of you may know it more as as AHEC, but there are AHECs over in 51 different states, and there are just wonderful places where they really are very much going out there and training people to work with the medically underserved. So that's one of our partners. And the other partner is the National Alliance for Hispanic Health. They're based here in Washington, D.C. They have affiliates in every state, and one of the things is that they have an 800 number that people call, particularly monolingual Spanish-speaking people will call, and they want to get any health kind of information. And so they'll call this number, and Ruth and I actually recently just trained all of their workers to be able to answer questions about Parkinson's disease. As you can imagine, with a project that's been going on for this long, we have learned many lessons, and we continue to learn many lessons along the way. We want to highlight some of these for you today. The first thing is that what we have found is that to do outreach is almost like a calling. There isn't a quick job description in doing this. You really have to be very passionate and really genuine in doing this. And if you don't kind of have it, then you might say the right words, but it's not necessarily going to go anywhere. And we have really found this to be key. It doesn't really matter sometimes what the title of the person is. What really matters many times is that passion that they have, that genuine feeling. And yes, there are skills that can be learned, but that really is a very important first step. The other thing is that when people actually decide to do outreach, we have found it very helpful for people to still step back and do some self-reflection, some self-assessment, check in on themselves, both as a person but also as an organization, and really start asking questions of what kinds of assumptions do I make? What kinds of, you know, areas of prejudice might I have, or areas of ignorance or stereotypes that I might hold that I haven't even actually thought about? So self-assessment is still a very important step. Even if you've been in the field doing this for 30 years, we think it's an ongoing kind of process. The other thing is that it really takes a while to build trust in some of these communities. Just because we might feel ready or because we suddenly have a grant to do outreach does not necessarily mean that a community is ready. And so, again, it's a matter of building a partnership, checking in with them, and really acknowledging in a very respectful way that, yes, you may be bringing in an expertise, but they also have a very strong expertise, and that you basically have to have a mutual respect going back and forth. You need to also get the buy-in at every level. And buy-in is something that really comes over a period of time. There might be some people that say yes very quickly, but then maybe down the road, when you really have to negotiate things, that yes may not come so quickly. So it's again a matter of negotiating and really hopefully ending up in a win-win situation, because that's the only way you're really going to get a partner. One of the other things that we've learned a lot about is coalitions. As Ruth said, we have had coalitions around the country. We started this program in 6 sites. At this point, we are in 23 states. And so there have been a lot of coalitions, and some have been more successful than others. But with coalition building, again, finding those partners sometimes takes time. Again, how you approach the partners, what your message is, how you come across, the respect, the listening to each other, and also meeting on a regular basis. That kind of dialogue, even though people are very busy, maintaining that dialogue and really making sure you're working sort of for a greater good is a very important piece. We have found with some coalitions that really don't meet that often, really just don't end up being as cohesive. But on the other hand, coalitions that meet and that really find how to share resources in, you know, where there is limited resources is a very powerful tool. And then we have also found that Parkinson, as probably with a lot of other chronic illness, We are best approaching this many times from a total healthcare wellness model. When we first started a lot of this, it was more from a disease-based model. And yes, of course, it is a disease. But when you go out, particularly in raising awareness and doing some beginning education, that when you approach it from a health model and from wellness, that actually piques the interest and brings in people. Because with Parkinson's, as in many other diseases, people may not even think that they have it necessarily. With Parkinson's, a lot of people just think it's part of normal aging. You know, that may happen with other chronic diseases. So going out there, sort of in a more holistic public health model, I think is important. And what we mean here by language, being careful about language, is we have also put a lot of emphasis on health literacy. We have brochures that we'll be glad to show you at the end. All health literacy has really been very important here, and involving the community. And here what we basically mean is also involving the consumers. Over 23% of the coalition members were actually persons with Parkinson's disease or their families. That's key. And finally, I just want to point out that from all of our lessons we've learned from the field doing this, we just actually recently published a book called Health Connect, A Practical Guide to Community Outreach, which was published by the Medtronic Foundation, and it's actually free. Medtronic Foundation has been the main funder of this program, and they wanted us to put all of this in writing. So I will leave it up here so that you can get the reference. You can actually get a free copy for yourself, or those of you who might be involved with students, I'm sure you can get free copies as well. Thank you very much. You mean in terms of the working basically with the providers? Well, what we have found is that cultural competence is something on a continuum. And a lot of providers, and in this case, a lot of our initial providers have been the persons working at the centers of the National Parkinson Foundation. And many of these are nurses, doctors, social workers, people in allied health. They have very good intentions, but they may not have necessarily thought of some of these things for quite a while. And so we've actually had to do quite a few workshops over the years. This has been a continual kind of thing where at every annual conference there is something around outreach, being culturally competent, as well as doing regional meetings. I mean, it's been ongoing. We have webinars. What we have found that does not work is a one-time thing. A one-time talk, seminar, as great as that might be, it's not enough. People need something sustained over a period of time. Ruth, you may want to say more about this.
I would just say quickly that it's really made a difference in the perception of people who never really thought about it. Initially, we were going to do this. There were some RNs who had masters in public health, and they came forward and said, we want to do this. And when they were supposed to go out and actually do the focus groups, they were some of the best people, but that was stepping outside of their comfort zone, so they had some difficulty. But I would say that it has really changed how they think. And so, you know, it's not perfect. It takes time. But it's introducing, it's a paradigm shift in how we talk about working with the community, and I think it's really made a difference. And I'm very pleased that we have done that. I think it's really important.